Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart, and today I'm joined locally by Jamie Scarborough. Welcome to the show, Jamie.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Jamie and I have known each other since back in the day when I was building probably the best CRM system that ever existed.
You were a kid.
Yeah.
You were literally a wunderkind.
Yeah. I don't know about wunderkind, but I certainly was young. I was like 8 years ago, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. It was Voltage. Yeah.
Voltage CRM. 100%. And so Jamie gave me a lot of great advice on sales and specifically on recruiting, and specifically about Voltage, like, this is garbage, don't do it.
I don't think I went that far, but it was good. It was exciting.
But I think you also made some introductions. You got me into one of my first, I think, like, speaking gigs that I'd done as a founder, which was around 8 years ago. They gave me a jacket, like a running jacket, and I still, it's not here. It's in my backpack. I still wear it today. But the reason why we're on the show today is Jamie is the co-founder at the Sales Talent Agency. This guy knows, I wouldn't say everything, but I'd say a lot about hiring salespeople.
I know almost nothing about most things, but I know quite a lot about this. Yeah.
Perfect. And the accent is just makes him sound like he knows everything. Oh, so sure. Maybe that's overcompensating. And so what have you hired now as a team? 5,300
salespeople? We launched in 2007.
Cool.
So we've been around for 13 years. Obviously it's grown in each year, but these days we'll fill around 800 roles a year. We'll work on about 1,500 a year. Projects. So a couple of hundred clients each year. Those clients do tend to change at different times.
Yeah.
Because we're a bit of an emergency service for companies. You know, they don't use us kind of as their first resort. They want their employer referrals. Mm-hmm. They've got an internal team a lot of the time. So yeah. They'll kind of use us when they're struggling to find good people.
Because that is like timing is such a huge piece. And we'll go into it a little bit later. Right. But yeah, 100%. And 800 people a year. Man.
Yeah, 800 people. We've got about 60 employees. 40 of them are pretty much full-time recruitment.
Okay.
We have our own small sales team as well that reaches out to companies and says, hey, you look like you're struggling to find people. So we've got a small kind of BDR, SDR team ourselves.
Yeah.
And we built that kind of around the Salesforce predictable revenue model, more like a software company.
You're welcome.
Yeah, exactly. And then 40 recruiters. So that's really our core engine is the hours, the quality hours of those recruiters.
Yeah, because you're not going super wide at if you're placing 800 people a year, what is that, roughly 65-70 people a month? And so you've got with 40 recruiters on, that's like a person and a half.
Yeah, a good recruiter, fully ramped up recruiter could theoretically fill around 8 roles a quarter. So around 32 a year, if my math is right.
Gotcha.
Some of them will do less because they're much bigger roles.
For sure.
So we'll do everything to executives. And you got to think the majority of what we do is headhunting. Mm-hmm. And that is a lot of outbound calling and it's very, very time consuming. A typical project we'll work on for at least 50 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And so I'm curious, cause I know you like, obviously you guys are hiring quite a few and it's across the spectrum from, you know, the senior sales leads, which need to, like, that's a pretty onerous process, I imagine, all the way down to, you know, the account execs, which is probably a little bit more lighter weight.
Even lower, not lower, but even younger or earlier, BDRs, SDRs. We actually founded something called the Great Canadian Sales Competition, which is the biggest student competition in the country. 4,000. I think there's been like 13,000 students in the last 6 years that have gone through it from 80 schools across the country. So, and that's just literally to get those early stage salespeople that can come into companies for BDR, SDR, inside sales kind of stuff.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. I'd love to go in that sometime. Dress up as a high schooler.
We'll get you as a judge. We'll get you as a judge. It'd be great.
Cool. Mm-hmm. That'd be fun. So where I'm trying to lead this is like, how do you look at your hiring process? Because that 800 people a year, I'm getting stressed just thinking about trying to place that many people.
Right. Well, we obviously don't have any say actually in who our client hires. They can decide for themselves. Mm-hmm. But what our job is to fill the funnel. Mm-hmm. We are responsible probably for presenting around 6 quality candidates to them for their roles. It normally takes us about 5.2 candidates presented to close a role successfully. Yeah. So we'll typically do 6. Sometimes we can do 18 or 20. Sometimes we can present 3 and we get a great hire. And if it's a particularly tricky role where it's a very, very defined profile, it may be much less than that. But what we do is we utilize a system called DNA Pro that we developed ourselves, which is just a framework it's kind of a language that we use to talk about salespeople, to talk about the talent that they have that everyone hopefully has some of, from whether they're 17 coming into it or 70 leaving it.
Yeah.
But also the experience they have, so that how job ready are they and how much of a risk are you taking on as an employer when you have that person? So obviously our clients don't really want to see thousands of candidates from us. They want to see the very best. Mm-hmm. And so we use this framework to kind of identify that before they ever get to our client.
I'd love to talk a little bit about risk. As somebody I've coached, or I coach a lot of entrepreneurs, and specifically like founder CEOs that are making their, you know, sort of first steps from founder-led selling into building their first sales team. I think this is one of the things that a lot of those early sales leaders miss, is the idea of the risk of not making the right hire or the risk of making the wrong hire. I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, it's really interesting, especially for early stage companies. We work with the biggest companies, but we also work with tons of really small companies that have very big growth plans. They tend to be well-funded. Mm-hmm. And so a venture capital has asked us to come in and support their growth. But the most risk they take is actually that early stage, because they don't know what they're looking for. Even if their leader has come from some really strong, let's say their leader came from Salesforce. And so they've got a great career, but Salesforce really knows what they're looking for. They really know how to onboard people. They really know how to keep them longer term. And so when you go and start another company that doesn't have that infrastructure, that hasn't quite figured out its value proposition yet, that hasn't got all the marketing tools and all of the, it can be a lot riskier. And so a huge amount of turnover comes in at those early stage companies, whether they choose the right person or not. Mm-hmm. And so what our job is to try and help them again, instead of making 9 mistakes out of 10, is to make 2.
That's fair. Because like, talk to me about the downside of the of making either the wrong hire or not making a hire at all.
Well, obviously no one wants to hire. That doesn't make sense. Like, you're not looking to spend money as a leader of a business. You're looking to create revenue. Mm-hmm. And you're going to make some hires to either directly create revenue or to create opportunities, efficiencies to create revenue. So everything you do when you're making that decision, or when you're making even the idea to hire, is kind of figuring out, how is this going to work? How is mm-hmm. this going to make us money? And so what we try and do is help a company understand not just what is the hire they're trying to make, but what is the problem that they're trying to solve, and how can we align a human person to that, to solve that specific problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you're thinking about, like, from my experience, we've gone through a couple of sales leaders on my side, and every time we sort of do a reset there, it's not just a loss of the individual and like the time that you've taken from them, where they could have been, you know, developing their career, you know, elsewhere and somewhere that was going to be a great fit for them long term. But I look at the cost of the business of, you know, not like, what is that lost revenue?
Well, it's lost revenue, obviously. I mean, that there's a million articles out there that say how much money you lose, and a huge amount of it depends on what you're committing to it, what yeah. the salary is, what the sales cycle is. Do they build the funnel at all? You know, you could be selling steak knives door to door and get a return on investment in 3 months. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing an enterprise sales role where it's $1 million software solution, that's a 3-year sales cycle, obviously someone's going to need to be there for a long time, and you're putting a lot of dough down first. So there's opportunity cost, there's revenue cost, there's your own personal time. But I think what most people miss is, and this is what we do for our own organization, is recognize how it impacts your culture when you have high turnover, and specifically turnover that is negative. Someone has failed. They don't often think of themselves as being the failure. They often think of you as being the failure. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty vocal about that. You know, one of the most modern things candidates look at is Glassdoor. And you'll see Glassdoor will have a lot of the worst scenarios from a person. So mm-hmm. you're making hires that aren't just, hey, I can churn and burn this person. Maybe they work, maybe they don't. There's a lot of layers to making that mistake. And if you're lucky as a leader, you're going to make lots of mistakes. And that's if you're lucky, because that means you've hired lots and lots of people. There is no good leader that I've ever seen that hasn't made mistakes. I've certainly made a bunch myself. The goal is not to be so risk averse that you aren't prepared to make a mistake, but it's just to understand what mistake you're making, to try and figure out what is a higher probability hire. You still don't know for sure it'll work.
True. Right. There really can be no way of just like when you're trying to book a meeting and knowing if this customer or this prospect is going to go and actually buy. There's no way of telling the psychographics behind somebody, like whether or not they're going to be a great fit 3-6 months.
Absolutely. And you change as a company, especially companies that are evolving. We're 13 years in and we still change every year fundamentally, mm-hmm. you know, so the strategies we have are constantly growing because the market is changing so much as well. So the kind of profile that worked really well for us a few years ago doesn't quite work as well for us now. And so we've had to adapt and evolve. And with that comes mistakes. You know, the biggest thing I try and do is show some responsibility mm-hmm. as a leader myself, so that if we're bringing someone into our company, I'm responsible for trying to make sure that they've got an opportunity to be successful, that they're developing the skill they need, that they've got the strategy they need. It's up to them to bring the wheel. And yeah. that is something that psychometrically you're often trying to figure out. You're not trying to figure out, are they smart? A huge amount of that you can find out in your interview. You're not even trying to figure out, you know, do you like them? You're really trying to figure out, are they going to put a lot of pressure on themselves? Are they going to set goals for themselves? And are they going to have the work ethic and resiliency to get to those goals? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, absolutely. That can change because they may be very goal-oriented, but it doesn't mean they're going to be goal-oriented for you. They may be incredibly driven, but they may not really like what you're doing that much. They may just need a job. So you've got to figure that out. Are they passionate about what you're doing? And will their will work for you?
I 100% agree. I'm curious how you think about your hiring strategy. Like, what are you trying to solve for in that process?
So the first thing we try and do is look at the outcome and go, okay, what is a great hire for our client? And that sounds so obvious, but it is revenue, obviously. How are you going to get it? What kind of sales cycle is it? How complicated is the sale? What kind of person are you going to be talking to and dealing with? You know, how many deals are you going to have to close a year? Is it something that you're going to have to make 50 calls a day? Some people like that. Or is it more like 12 meetings a week? Or is it more like 3 clients a year and you're unbelievable? Very different cadence, very different kind of sales personality. Mm-hmm. All of them require a lot of effort. All of them require a good brain and a connective personality, but very different kind of sales style. And so the first thing we're trying to do is figure out that. And then we try and figure out, well, what would a good return on investment be? Is it something that if someone's there for 1.5, 1.6 months, they can be really successful? If so, you can take a little bit more risks on that talent because the average tenure of an employee now is very short. Mm-hmm. But if it is someone that you need 3 years, 4 years to get a good return on investment, you have to think very, very differently. Yeah. The last part of it is that cultural contribution. Are they going to add to your culture? Are they going to help you expand and build an infrastructure? Or are they going to be very strong individually, but quite difficult to work with and to potentially be a problem for you to attract other talent? Mm-hmm. So we start there and then we say, okay, if we know what a great hire is, how do we know when we've made, like, why have we made bad hires? It's almost like you've got to reverse it. Mm-hmm. Why do you typically make bad hires? Most employers think it's because they choose incorrectly, right? If you think about all of the technologies out there, all of the different disruptive things, it's all about choosing. How do you psychometrically analyze talent? How do you look for something? The reality is that's the third reason that you've made a bad hire typically. The first reason is you didn't have good people to choose from, right? You're picking low probability candidates, but they're the best. You knew they weren't exactly what you wanted, but you needed to make a hire and you made it. If you had a better pool, you would have selected someone better. So it wasn't a choosing problem. It was a no one to choose problem.
So let's drill in on that. So the first reason people make bad hires is they're top of funnel, the leads that they're picking from are not the best leads.
Good candidates have choice.
So what else?
Well, so you start with that, right? Good candidates have choice, right? Everybody wants this kind of really enthusiastic, really likable, really smart challenger type salesperson, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if it's 1 year, 2 years, 5 years. Everyone wants it. There's thousands of those jobs on the market right now. If we put one person in front of 10 companies, they'll all put an offer out to that person. So you've got to say, well, what are we going to do to make our environment attractive to them? Okay, well, you can outbid everyone. But the reality we've found is most good salespeople do not pick a job based on the salary alone. It has to be competitive, but it can't be the only offer you have. It's got to be more than that. It's got to be, what are you selling? What does it feel like to be there? What are they going to learn? How is their career going to develop?
Yeah, who am I working for?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, you could argue, it's the same thing with salespeople. The best salespeople don't sell on price. The best salespeople sell on
value. Right. And so you go, okay, well, I know I can be attractive as an employer, but there's thousands of employers out there. So it's not enough just to have a message. You've got to have a sales team recruitment to mm-hmm. go out and actually tell that message. Some of it's going to be done for your employees or employee referral. Some of it is going to be people who know your brand. Some of it is going to be you can advertise on a job board. Or some of it is going to be you, your internal team, or a company like ours going out and tapping people on the shoulder and saying, hey, you may not be actively looking, or you may not have actively thought of this company, but let me tell this story. Mm-hmm. And so it's being able to find the right talent, being aggressive, thinking of recruitment as a sales function, not an HR function. And then going, well, it's also marketing. Good people have choice. I have to figure out what is it about our organization that has a employment value proposition for them.
Well, because you want top performers. And when was the last time a top performer went, I just did 240% of my quota last year. I think I'll look for another job.
Right.
That's just not a thought that ever occurs, unless there's a reason why, like, oh, I hate my boss, or, you know,
there wasn't something like else that for me. There wasn't, even top performers making hundreds of thousands of dollars want to evolve. Mm-hmm. They get bored too. And so you've always got to think, well, I want to provide them money and great opportunities, but if it's stagnant, if a really driven person feels like they've got nowhere to go and all it is a paycheck, you know, I've been in that spot where it's just not enough. So finding and attracting people is more important, is a bigger problem than choosing them. Most people can actually choose pretty well if they've got the best to choose from. Mm-hmm. The other one that is, I think, the more interesting one and the one that's harder to explore is, how do you equip them for success? A huge amount of times we make a bad hire is us, not them.
Yeah.
We've actually hired reasonably good ingredients. If it was just one person who could do that job, then it's a, you know, it's a calling, it's not a job. So we got to say, okay, well, how do we make it so that top 10% talent, not top 0.1%, top 10% talent can actually do really well here? Like, what is that? What is the needs? We always call it like the Maslow's law, like the hierarchy of needs.
Yeah,
what is the hierarchy of sales needs? You know, what do you need early and ongoing to create a career at that company?
Love it. And I mean, I'll be honest, we've certainly made hires that are square peg round hole, here predictable revenue, and they've gone on to do amazing things.
Right.
And they were super talented individuals. It was just, you know, if you're looking for a certain type of wrench and you find a screwdriver,
right, that's right.
Like, it's not going to help you get the job done.
Some salespeople are really strong when they've got a very well-defined value proposition. A value proposition that says clearly what problem is solved, clearly what's uniquely able to be solved by you, and clearly there's proof, there's case studies, there are reference letters, there's testimonials. If some salespeople thrive, they absolutely kill it, but they may struggle in an environment where they have to be a little bit more marketing focused, where they have to find that value proposition, where they have to build.
It's a little bit more
evangelical.
Yeah.
I was always the reverse. I struggle with a already fundamental. I'm not as good as some salespeople personally when everything's figured out, but I'm really good at figuring it out. I'm good. I'm the good first or second salesperson, not the 200th.
Fair.
Know? But that's why a lot of the times you'll see someone go on really well. But sometimes it's not even just that. It could be, you know, the infrastructure at that time just wasn't figured out enough for them. So many times, every time someone leaves our organization, I try and think, should we never have hired them? Did we hire them and it was the right journey? They had a great journey. Or could we have done better? And we have way more on the could we have done better losses than anything else, right? Yeah. Nearly all the time we should have hired them. It's very rare that I've said, you know what? We were wrong. No, they were good talent. We just weren't ready, or we weren't investing enough, or we got a little lackadaisical, or we kind of let things go and it was our fault.
And sometimes it is the natural progression from you hire somebody amazing, your company is only growing at a certain rate, there are only so many new opportunities that are there for that person that wants to take the next level. And if you've hired a rocket ship, trying to keep them here is not going to be the best thing for them. And so the natural next step is sometimes out of the company.
Well, and it comes back to that idea of the cultural fit for your business, because when you're starting your company and you're growing it, you don't think about territory alignment that much. You don't go, hey, we're going to make sure that the 30th person has still got good accounts. You kind of go, hey, let's go, free for all. Go, go, go. Put it in the system, you own it. And the next thing you know, you've kind of created a bit of a roadblock for yourself, a bottleneck. And that's why it's so important to hire people and explain to them that their territories will be changing if we're lucky. Mm-hmm. If we do well, your territory is going to change. That's how it's going to work. When you're going to start off with blue skies, but those skies, ideally, if we all do a good job, are gradually going to get split up by more and more and more and more people. And you need a salesperson who culturally believes in that, wants that, is contributing to, they see growth of the infrastructure as their success, not just their pocketbook.
Mm-hmm. And so this is the last piece of that sort of equip.
Yeah. So we call it find, attract, choose, equip. Face. Originally was going to be called, when I wrote it, it was find, engage, choose, equip. But that was feasy. And I thought that wasn't going to quite be as attractive to the market. So we called it find, attract, choose, equip. And again, every acronym we create is pretty stupidly simple, but it's designed to be stupidly simple just to give us some framework for our clients to think about. It's not enough just to think, get us good people. Great, we can get you good people. Can you hire them? Will they want you? Do they choose you first, or is yours the last choice and that's the what they chose? And when they do, what are we going to do to make, we got a guarantee. If they don't last with you, we have to replace them. So it's in everyone's best interest to make sure it lasts. Mm-hmm. Even if they pass the guarantee, you're not going to be a very good client of ours long-term if everyone leaves after 6 months. We need to work together to figure out how do we make a long-term successful hire so that I've got a long-term client and you're building your business.
Because it comes back to, it's you're, when you're hiring some, like if I'm thinking about hiring you, I'm not thinking about, I need, like obviously the job to be done is hire this individual. But I don't necessarily care. Like you said, I'm not trying to buy people. I'm trying to buy more revenue. Exactly. Yeah. And if the result is only lasting 6 months, I'm going to say, okay, well, Jamie's a crappy lead source for
sales talent. That's why we talk about great hires. And it sounds so facetious to say like, well, great hire. It's so easy. But what I often will try and work with our clients on is when we ask them, what is a great hire for you? They will pick someone recent. And I'll say, they're potentially a great hire, but they haven't done enough yet. Why are you not picking someone who's been here 3 years, who's been a top performer? Yeah, they're not as shiny and bright as you, but that was the result you're looking for. So now we know what our result is. Let's work with that result. Because if someone comes in and kills it for two, we've all had that as leaders. Someone who comes in, sets the world on fire, and they leave after 6 months. And all we want to do is find another person like that. And it's like, well, why do we want to necessarily replicate that? When the result is probably going to happen again. If we're not enough for them now, we're not going to be enough for them in the future.
100%. I've been that rep a number of times. You come in and I've been 200 plus percent quota the first year. And then the year two, I'm like, I'm bored. I'm going to go find something else.
Right.
And it's like sales, that account exec role long-term is not something that I was really great at maintaining that focus at. I was similar to you. I'm really loved figuring things out, figuring
out the creativity of it.
Exactly. It's the challenge of trying to bring something new to market. But then once we had it figured out, it was like,
I met you relatively young for you. And it was pretty obvious pretty early that you weren't going to be someone, you know, fit in really well unless you were running it. And I think that's a benefit. That's not a negative, but it takes you sometimes a while to figure it out.
And sometimes you've got those people and trying to figure out how to, like, should we hire them? Should we optimize for hiring that individual or optimize for hiring somebody that's going to stick there for 2 to 3 years?
Absolutely. But one of the things you want to do is make an environment that encourages people like you. Because if all you want to do is create widgets, you know, you had someone on your last podcast or one of the last that was talking about metrics and, you know, whether they believed it. But one thing I did agree with them on, I didn't agree with everything, but one of the things I did agree on was that you can't just hire widgets. Salespeople at their very best need to be creative. It's a really tough job to go and just dial every day or knock on every door or influence or network. It's really hard because you've got to get no a lot, and that's your job. No is your job. Yeah. That's the reason you're doing it, because if it was all yes, they wouldn't need you.
Yeah, then you're an order taker.
That's right. And other people couldn't do it. So when it's that kind of job, you need to feel like you've got the creativity to try something different, to be able to go around things and to outthink things. And if all someone's telling you to do is to go, here's a script And here's what you say when they say no. Mm-hmm. It's not very exciting, not very creative. And so what I try and do is create an environment for our salespeople that is creative. Let them go in different directions. Let them try different things. Let them help us build our infrastructure and build the case studies and all of that kind of stuff, because that will keep people longer who are those kind of challenger salespeople that we want, right? But challenges are challenges for everyone. If you're trying to make a environment there where they've got nothing to do, nothing to change, yeah, it can be annoying.
100%. And I think it comes back to what you said earlier, which is know what you're trying to solve for from the get-go. I'm curious, you're a company about 60 people. You're hiring about 800 people a year. I'm wondering what your internal hiring process looks like.
Obviously, we have a bit of a benefit in that we see 18,000 salespeople a year at different levels, and they see us. So without ever applying to us, we do have people that come through our doors who are like, I want to do what you're doing, which is a huge benefit for a small company like ours. We'd never normally have that.
So you get to see it like the top of all.
That's right. Yeah. The finding for us is a lot easier. The attracting is tricky because you got to think, yes, they see us. Yes, they like us. But every single day they see five other jobs as well that are looking for them. So a huge amount of the people that leave our organization will go to one of our clients.
Do you at least get the finder's fee?
Well, that's my business partner would say it's, yes.
That's a tough, tough,
it
tough
depends.
One to answer.
I mean, you know, if a client is like very good client to us and they are honest and open with us, hey, what are you going to do? As you said, I can't stop someone from going with their career. That's their life.
Yeah.
Just because I want them to stay for the next 25 years, it doesn't mean that's their path. I got to be accountable for keeping them. Not their responsibility isn't loyalty.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, so we have a very good opportunity to find good people. We do attract them well for our size, but they've got a lot of competition every day. Where we have to focus aggressively is on choosing, because our job is a really tricky job. Like imagine a sales job where everything shifts all the time. Your value proposition changes all the time. You're working on five different jobs, which you have to be able to create a value proposition for every single week, month. Your candidates, which are your product, can choose to not be there. You can get all the way to the end of the sales cycle and your product decides it doesn't want to be sold. And so it takes an incredibly resilient person. Mm-hmm. And 50% of the projects we work on, if we're doing a great job, don't result in revenue. We're called contingency agency, which means we charge only if you fill a role. 50% of the time we don't do that. So that means 50% of the time that person could have worked 50 hours and make nothing. Now they make their salary, but
yeah,
you know,
but you're in it for the commission.
It for the problem solving, in it for the complexity of it. So we need problem solvers. To try and find problem solvers, we know you're not just going to win in our business just by running a wall as hard as you can. You've got to be able to outthink things. So we use assignments. The best thing, there's loads of different tools out there. There's different top grading interviews, panel interviews. There's online assessments. But the biggest things that we've found for us is a unique assignment. Every single candidate that comes through our doors does the same assignment. It's designed to test them in a few different areas, make them replicate a little bit of the job that they're going to have so that they can decide for themselves if they like it. And then for us, it gives us a chance to work with them and figure out, do we like them? Did they work hard on this? Even if they were wrong, were they wrong in a great way or were they wrong in a lazy, boring way?
Yeah.
If they were wrong, great, because we can fix wrong. Yeah. We can't fix passion. We can't fix whether we want to work with them, and we're going to be excited to see them on day one.
Totally. You know?
So that's what we do.
And so what does this assignment look like? Can you walk me through from like start to finish?
Yeah. So we do a 4-point assignment. If you think about the job we have, as a recruiter, it is project management, it is sales, it is marketing, it is researcher. So we use 4 different parts to replicate that. The first part is typically a marketing-based task. It could be as simple as, hey, compare us online to our competitors. Tell us what we think we're doing well and what opportunities we're missing. Mm-hmm. Very wide open thing, but they can come around and think about it. Good thing for them there is they have to research us really well. And they also have to look at the industry and see where we position ourselves within the industry. The next thing we do is more of a sales-related challenge. It's kind of like research some companies. Tell us why you chose those five companies. What was it about them that you thought they should be our client? Those would be the five that you would call the first day of work if you had the opportunity. And tell us who in that company specifically you would be calling. We're trying to get a sense of, do they understand what we do? Do they think interestingly about what kind of companies would use our services? Or are they pretty basic in their thinking? Then we say, okay, get us four candidates. Two we want as rookies, and two we want within 5 to 7 years of experience. And I want you to tell us just on their LinkedIn profile, without meeting them, why you chose them as high potential. And what we're looking for there is for them to look for indications in someone's resume that make sense. Look for red flags. Look for questions that they would ask, whether it be a rookie or whether it be someone senior. So if it's a rookie, we're looking for someone to be thinking, hey, I want someone who's shown some kind of competitiveness, who's shown some kind of need to be around other people. And if it's more senior, we're looking for someone who's shown a good tenure, good decision-making, and has hit numbers consistently. And then the last thing we do is we go, hey, let's do a role play. You know, they're going to have to do hundreds of calls a week, conversations a week. They need to be able to say a value proposition. So this gives me a chance to do a little elevator role play with them and get a sense of, are they going to be able to do this? Or is it going to be, are they going to be able to influence? If they can't, they're going to struggle.
So I love this. How much of this is online versus in person?
All of it's in person. What we do is, the first thing we try and do is, and I recommend this to our clients too, is remember, they've got good people of choice. So my job first in meeting is actually to sell to them. I'm not picking them yet. Obviously, they may, in the conversation, I may find that I'm not enjoying it. I don't want a next step, but I'm not purposely interviewing them. I'm telling them about a company, what our goals are, what the role is, and I'm answering their questions and seeing if I like them. If I do like them, I'm now going to do a more deep interview where I can understand their backgrounds and the decision making. And then if they like me and I like them, I'm going to give them the assignment.
And so that's, you're in for the interview. I'm going to give you the assignment. That's here right now.
No, you they'll normally have 24 to 72 hours to complete it.
Okay.
It depends on their work schedule. We tend to give them a little bit of leeway because if they're working hard, if they've got stuff going on, and we always say to them, if as you're doing this, you're finding this a chore, you're not excited to do this, stop.
Yeah.
You won't like this job. So stop immediately. No hard feelings. We'll find you something else.
Gotcha. Interesting. So you've got your, if I can just like place this in your process, first is your first meeting is in person.
Can be in person. A lot of times it's over the phone.
Okay.
Just a nice little chat.
Yeah.
And it's me selling.
Little chat, having a cup of tea, pinky up.
Cup of tea, I'm English from him, but I could be doing a cup of tea, a scone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And so a little pre-screen on the phone, then you get them in person for the longer conversation.
Yeah, to dig in. Get permission to actually dig into their background a little bit. Look at the decisions they've made, why they've made them. Obviously, you know, again, there's no perfect resume. And even people with perfect resumes tend to not always work out. So I'm just looking for why this is an obvious next step for them. Mm-hmm. And whether I think they can do a good job.
I'm looking for like good enough in a resume. I'm like, I don't care what it fucking looks like. As long as you didn't send it to me in like some obscure format and it's like broken in their spot.
Well, you're in that spot, which is a lot of entrepreneurial companies where you want to get out, you want talent more than you need a resume. Whereas if you are a company, if you're Google, you can have both. If you're us, we have to be looking for people that are like the diamond in the rough, as opposed to you're going to have a perfectly scripted resume and you're going to have this massive amount of entrepreneurial talent.
That's fair. And that comes back to like everybody's a little bit different. So if I bring it back to your process, you have this, the phone screen, you have the first internal, and then you're really where you're really, really digging in. And then from there, if you're like, hey, this person is a potential go, then you give them the assignment.
I like you. You like me.
Yeah.
Hey, do this assignment. If you do well, and doing well doesn't mean nailing it. You could go completely the wrong path. But as long as you've put the effort in, as long as we want to work with you and we're like excited to spend 100 hours a year of one-on-one coaching with you, then and we think that you got the right tools to be successful, you're going to get a job. So by that point, it's very likely they'll get a job unless they screw up. We don't want to put someone through all of that work mm-hmm. with a high probability that it won't work. You know, a lot of companies make a mistake with an assignment when they do it so early. And what a miserable experience it is for that candidate to come in and it be even a coin flip. A lot of times it's like a 90% chance they won't get it. Ours is, we like you enough to, and we think that all the indicators are there. Let's find out for sure.
So how long? Because we're three questions here. I mean, I could, how long do you expect them to put into this? Are we talking like a couple hours?
Good 4 hours of work. And it tends to be, we don't tell them. We don't tell them how to present it. We don't tell them that they've got to use PowerPoint or anything. We just say, hey, and some people have come in and they've been super, super smart, but they've come in with a piece of paper and a bit of pen and they've done a great job, but you can tell that they're not going to work very hard. And then other people come in with really elaborate things, but they go in a really odd and boring direction and that's not exciting. So we don't really care, but they tend to put about 4 hours in because they get interested in it. And we ask them that. Was this fun? Well, of course they're going to say, yeah, it was fun. But you can tell. You can tell if they're like, what was it? What part did you spend a lot of time on? How did you come to this decision when you were choosing clients? Where did you go? Mm-hmm. And if they go, well, I asked my family. These are the five. It's like, okay, well, that wasn't very inspired.
Bye-bye.
But if they're like, yeah, hey, I really looked in. I looked at the fastest growing companies. And then I compared those with the companies that got the best ratings on Glassdoor. And then I, you know, it's kind of good. Okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's right after that first in-person meeting where you're like, you've made a decision that this is at least a 50-50 hire. We want
at least, I mean, yeah. it's a 75% chance.
Okay. And so you give them the assignment. They're coming back for a presentation. Like, yeah. What does that look like?
They'll present in front of a few people. Yeah. And the goal in that is not to beat them up. It's supposed to be a positive experience, but it's not supposed to be an easy experience. The goal is we're in a business where we get beaten up a lot. Mm-hmm. Challenged on what we're presenting. And so we do look for obvious things to improve and ways of thinking that are different because we want to see how are they going to take that feedback? Are they coming into this going, I'm right, you're wrong. It's really hard to develop that kind of person. Mm. It doesn't mean they can't be successful somewhere else, but again, they may be more successful in a place which is a little bit more rigid. Ours is a place that requires entrepreneurialism every day. You have to think like a business within a business. You're making decisions about your accounts, about your contracts, about your candidates that are very intricate, very gray. And so you need to be able to be very thoughtful mm-hmm. and be able to show integrity when it's not always easy to. And so we're looking for people that can think and adapt and will listen to the feedback and will absorb it. They may fight on it. That's good. But they won't fight on all of it, mm-hmm. you know.
Interesting. And so what are some positive and negative signals that you're looking through? Because you're basically saying, hey, do this homework, and then they're gonna come in and present, and there's a panel of people, which is intimidating.
Yeah.
And then you're gonna question and challenge their line of thinking to understand.
Yeah. We're looking for that moment where as soon as they realize they could have done it differently, it's exciting to them. It's not depressing. They're yeah. not broken by that. That you can see a little bit in there where they're mad at themselves,
yeah.
but they're like, that will never happen again. I will remember that for the rest of my life. I remember when I was younger, I had a boss, I was working for Monster at the time, and the boss was named Gabriel, and he asked us all to come in and present a value proposition for Monster. And I came in and I was a top sales performer, came in and very arrogantly said the value proposition. And he quite rightly beat me up because he said it's too generic.
Now, how long did he actually like beat you?
Yeah, he was a lot tough. I'm 6'6", but he was tall.
Jersey and gave.
He did. He did. No, he just made me feel really, really small in my way, in the best of ways, in exactly what I needed at that time, which was a little bit of hubris. I was. Sometimes you can get really up on yourself because your result's so good, but you realize in little moments like that, oh boy, I could have done a lot better. And I remember that moment for the rest of my life. And I actually hope that the people that come in and do the assignment have a great experience and have that moment, which is like, oh boy, I could have done that differently, or I would have presented that information differently, or I would have researched that more, or I didn't understand the question and I should have asked because they gave me the opportunity to, and I didn't. I thought I knew it, and now I can see that there's two ways to think about that.
And so you're sort of looking for that like reaction.
I said,
they've been trying to solve a puzzle, they couldn't figure this piece out. You're right. Trying to solve a riddle. and you give them the answer like, oh, I should have figured
that out. You can see in their head that they're internalizing going, oh boy, that they believe they should have got it. Mm. You know, they are mad at themselves. Like, I can't believe I didn't get that crossword clue. I know that answer, that Jeopardy answer. I knew it.
Yeah.
And so it's exciting to them in a way. Yes, it's annoying, but it's also like, oh, you know, like an energy moment, which is what you're looking for. Because what you don't want is someone who is like sycophantically following. Yes. Okay. Great. 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 Because that's just, they're never going to come back. And they're not, too far away.
They're not engaged, right? Yeah. They're like, I'm presenting. Here's what I think you want to say.
Yeah. Teach me. Teach me. Teach me. Great. I want to teach you, but I need you to kind of, this is a business where you definitely need to be able to teach yourself too.
Yeah. You know? And you need to have a bit of a backbone as opposed to just come in and say, I'm going to do whatever.
That's right.
Whatever you need. Yeah. Like, I'm going to be that person.
We're looking for someone who is excited about that experience. They're coming out of it more excited about us than when they went into it. Mm-hmm. They saw it as a work, but they were excited to do that work. They did pretty well on all of it, because if they didn't do well on one thing, it can be a problem, because it is a very well-rounded job. And it's something that we can't always teach those things. And so, yeah, I'm looking for someone who is inspired by it, just like we are, because I want to go to work on someone's first day really excited to invest. Mm-hmm. And it's not the money.
Yeah.
You know, it's, we've done this enough now. It's not the money. It's, do I want to work with that person? Am I excited for them to represent us? Do I think they're going to be amazing problem solvers? Could I see them as our best employee? Like right now they're our newest, but could I see a scenario where they could be our best? Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they'll get there, and it doesn't mean we'll do enough to get them there, but that's what you want when you're going through that decision making.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah. I like the, you can almost feel it when you're like, when they're really in sunk into that process. I am curious though, as we were talking about this, are you worried that people that are interviewing for the Sales Talent Agency are going to find this episode and now they know all the secrets?
Well, I think that we've written so much stuff about this kind of thing that I'm sure they can find it. And also a lot of other people have gone through it and they're smart. They'll go and talk to one of our people. And a lot of times they come from employer referrals. So I'm not too worried, because I can always tell when someone's really excited about it. That's why we don't do a 30, 60, 90 day plan, because they're so easy to replicate from someone else's. I've seen pretty much everyone that's ever been done for Sales Talent Agency. I know when it's new, mm-hmm. and I know when it's been taken somewhere else.
Gotcha. And so last question here, because I really appreciate you coming by, and I know you've got lots to get going to running a 50-person business or 60-person business and all.
Did 10 people leave since I got here? Because that could be a problem.
Since we've been doing this podcast, your customers are very happy. You just earned 10 more commissions.
Excellent. Yeah. Good.
Somebody made quota by selling off your internal people. I'm curious how this has evolved over the last 13 years you've been doing this.
Well, it's really interesting, because for the first 10 years, we really were very defined, like entrepreneurially, like everyone, it was a very flat organization. Mm-hmm. And we did well, but it really relied very much on the individuals and not the infrastructure. And in the last few years, we've really tried to develop that infrastructure. Mm-hmm. We've had some successes with that. We've had some challenges with that, just like every company. But I think what we're trying to do right now is to figure out a way where we can get creative, entrepreneurial people working effectively in a community, because that's the strength of our business. One recruiter on their own can be really strong, but 60 together can share a massive candidate pool and client base that makes it so much more effective and efficient. So that's what we're trying to do right now.
Right on. I can appreciate that. It's a much different environment, one to hire into, two to work in, and three to manage when you are a two-person shop versus right. a 20, 30, 40, 50-person shop.
Yeah, the biggest thing that we've decided this year was, look, people can be successful fairly quickly on paper, but to be a really great recruiter where you actually have to help your clients solve the problem, not just provide them candidates, takes years, literally years. And so we've got to invest that time. We can't afford to have two-year people. Mm-hmm. We have to say 5 years. We're going to make a career of it. Now, some of that is picking the right person. Some of it is us trying to find a way to act more like a law firm, where someone can come in and can become a partner not just employees, so that there's a real opportunity.
There's that growth.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because the people we want are people that theoretically could do it themselves. We've got to give them a reason to do it with us. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest reason. The education, good money, obviously, and a long-term exit.
Love it. And I think it's a... I've heard of lots of friends that have gone into recruiting from sales. Mm-hmm. It is a hard job, but if you can make it, it can be exceptionally rewarding.
Almost every, you know, if sales is the accidental career, recruitment is the accidental career within sales. It's like everyone has tried it at some point. Mm-hmm. It is a lot harder than it seems. You go into it thinking you're here to help people. That's very rarely what you're doing. You're trying to find the best of the very best who have choice. And you've got to try and persuade them to choose your client. It's a really tricky job. Mm-hmm.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Glad you're doing so well.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. If people are curious about finding more about your face, not literally your face, but the face that we talked about, find, attract, choose, equip, and not feces, which I argue, you know.
Would have been better.
They would have talked
about, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's the best way they can find out more about the things you do at Sales Talent
LinkedIn, Agency? LinkedIn, you can, Jamie Scarborough, you can also go to salestalentagency.com.
Cool. Pronounced just like Scarborough, Ontario.
Just like Scarborough, Ontario, yeah. Scarborough, England.
Yeah. Or, not Edinburgh.
Not Edinburgh. No. Yeah. Although my mom does say it's supposed to be Scarborough.
Scarborough.
But I don't know. We call it differently here. So I guess I've evolved.
Right on. Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks,
everybody. We'll see you all next week.